Good morning. This is Wendy Bauer reading to you today from the Decatur Herald and Review for June 8th, 2015. We'll begin with an article titled "Hundreds Seek Their Fame with Wheel of Fortune." This is an article from Forsyth, written by Rachel Rogers of the Herald and Review staff. Married couple Angela and Keith Chase do everything together. The two 44-year-olds from Taylorville are both music teachers and have developed 21 years of shared experiences. On Saturday, they added a new joint venture to their list. In a sea of hundreds of people from throughout the region looking to land an appearance on the longest-running syndicated game show in the nation, the Chases both found their names being called. During auditions to become a contestant on Wheel of Fortune, Angela Chase was randomly drawn to participate in the first round of three simulated shows throughout the day in Hickory Point Mall. Stepping on stage with hosts Marty Lublin and Heidi Jackson, emulating Pat Sajak and Vanna White, Angela Chase touted her musical abilities, singing an impromptu song. "I've been watching the show since it started, since I was a little girl," she said. "It's important to give some personality in the audition." Describing the experience as pure excitement, she didn't have any room for nervousness as she guessed letter after letter on the board. Though they share a great many things, Keith Chase did not have the same level of confidence as his wife when he was called for the last round of the show. "I definitely had some butterflies in my stomach because I know I'm not as good at this as she is," he said. Having watched both of his parents take advantage of an opportunity to compete on national television, 13-year-old Connor Chase said he was inspired. "They made me feel like I can go up there sometime and do this," he said. The majority of contestants came from local and surrounding areas, but Mary Anhauser drove more than 3 hours for a possibility of her application being drawn from a vast collection of papers tumbling around in what resembled a large bingo cage. Anhauser, who served in various roles in the military for 30 years, traveled more than 160 miles from her home in Bloomington, Indiana, meeting up with her brother, who drove from Urbana. Living in Germany for about 3 decades, Anhauser didn't watch much TV, but Wheel of Fortune was often playing when she would visit her mother in Lisle. "I didn't make the cut for the first show, but I decided to hang on for one more round," she said, "and it paid off." A constant wave of energy flooded through the crowd at Bergner's wing of the mall, emphasized by individuals such as 27-year-old Stephen Etheridge, an engineer at Archer Daniels Midland Company, who was jumping and cheering long before his name was called. Swept into the ardor of the event was 65-year-old travel agent Sue Whitted of Clinton. "I just screamed, and I'm really not a screamer," she said. "This is great for the area. I'm so tickled for Decatur." Saturday was not the first time the Wheelmobile made its way to the area, as 4 individuals made it onto the show from auditions in 2007, said Carol Barnes, creative services director at WAND-TV, which was the lead sponsor of the event. Auditions will continue from noon to 4 p.m. today, with simulated shows at noon, 1:30, and 3 p.m. The main entrance for the event is between Kohl's and Panda Express, with the application line located near Ross Dress for Less. And from Springfield, an article written by Kurt Erickson, the Herald and Review Springfield Bureau Chief, titled "Opponents Block Local Unit Pruning." Governor Bruce Rauner created a task force in February to find ways to get rid of Illinois' vast number of small local governments. But 4 months into their meetings, the panel, headed by Rauner's running mate, Evelyn Sanguinetti, appears to be hitting the same roadblocks that have stalled consolidation efforts in the past. School officials, labor unions, and the local governments themselves say there are good reasons for leaving many of Illinois' nearly 7,000 units of government intact. Take one proposal under discussion. It would give governments more ability to privatize services. The proposal raised concerns from the Illinois Federation of Teachers, which argued such a change could lead to outside companies hiring outside help to run programs for school districts. "But we want the lunch lady to be the lunch lady from the community," said Federation lobbyist Cynthia Reismond Lund. In calling for the study, Rauner said too many layers of local government aids, government corruption. He said the 6,968 governments also contribute to why Illinois residents pay some of the highest local government taxes in the nation, including the 10th highest sales tax and 2nd highest property tax. "These inefficient layers of government for the taxpayer have got to be brought down so we can help reduce this environment we have that's conducive to corruption," Rauner said during a news conference in February in Elmhurst. The question for advocates of streamlining is this: if Illinois got a do-over, would it set up a governmental structure that includes nearly 7,000 units of local government, ranging from mosquito abatement districts to solid waste agencies? But the commission is finding out what those who have studied the issue before have long known. Once a government is created, it is tough to shut down. Some taxing districts can only be dissolved by state law. Some taxing districts can only be dissolved by a voter referendum. And some units of government have no mechanism for being dissolved. Among them are cemetery maintenance districts, civic center authorities, port districts, tuberculosis sanitarium districts, and museum districts. According to data collected by the commission, there were 309 units of government created between 1998 and 2015. The data, compiled by the Illinois Comptroller's Office, found that 56 units were dissolved during that time period for a net gain of 253 units of government over 17 years. "We have seen very little appetite in the Illinois legislature to eliminate local governments and move toward consolidation," said Lawrence Massal, president of the Civic Foundation. One member of the commission, State Senator Dale Reiter, a Republican from Mattoon, said attempts at consolidation inevitably end up in turf wars between the governments involved. "That's just the way it is," Reiter said. He added that government officials often feel pride in what they do, making it tough for them to give up their roles in hopes of lowering property taxes for residents. With high barriers potentially halting efforts to eliminate governmental units, the panel has begun looking at ways to reduce state requirements on cities and schools as a way to help lower their operating costs. Hundreds of unfunded mandates on local governments cost taxpayers billions of dollars per year. Sanguinetti earlier suggested the state conduct a cost analysis of all the unfunded mandates to determine which ones need to be replaced, revised, or repealed. There are hurdles to eliminating mandates, too. In 2013, State Senator Andy Menar, Democrat from Bunker Hill, submitted legislation that would have eliminated many mandates for schools, including the teaching of Black history, anti-bullying, and driver's education. Opponents said each of the mandates is important to the proper education of children. That attitude has spread to the commission. The panel met May 20th at the offices of the Illinois Municipal League in Springfield. That meeting came after two previous meetings in April and May had to be canceled. But not enough members showed up May 20th to have a quorum, leaving the committee unable to vote on recommendations designed to jumpstart the consolidation process. Some of the absences were by design. Labor unions, for example, opposed recommendations affecting the prevailing wage, privatization, and relief from unfunded state mandates. The unions then called union-friendly members of the committee and asked them to simply stay away from the meeting. Afterward, Sanguinetti pledged to work hard to ensure enough members show up at a late June meeting to have an official vote. "I'm going to be making some phone calls," the lieutenant governor said. There have been some small victories. House Bill 3693 also won support in the House and Senate. It would dissolve Belleville Township and transfer the duties to the city of Belleville. On May 19th, the House unanimously approved House Bill 228, which puts a moratorium on the creation of any new government unit by the General Assembly. But, as committee member Warren Dixon of Naperville said, most new units of government are created at the county level, which wouldn't be affected by the law. In an article from Decatur written by Teresa Churchill, a senior writer from the Herald and Review, Milliken to host State Science Fair. Because recruiting students is vital to the success of small colleges, Milliken University plans to venture where no private institution has gone before. Milliken will host the 2016 State Exposition of the Illinois Junior Academy of Science, an event expected to bring more than 1,200 high school and middle school students to campus for the Academy's annual research competition. Judy Shepler, the Academy's immediate past president, said she's excited the science fair is returning to Central Illinois after going to Northern Illinois University in DeKalb in 2014 and to Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, May 1st to 2nd. The exposition's longtime home had been the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, but the event had to find other quarters during renovation to the university's State Farm Center. "It's a huge time commitment for the host," Shepler said. "We're happy to come to Milliken because the university has such a strong reputation for STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, education." The dates are May 13th and 14th in 2016, and locations will be Schilling Hall and the Decatur Indoor Sports Center. Technically, the last day of classes for the academic year, May 13th, will revert to a study day for Milliken students, a campus tradition until 5 or 6 years ago. Dan Miller, professor of mathematics and member of a four-person committee who worked on the project, said the university didn't throw its hat into the ring right away, but did so after hiring President Patrick White in 2013 and filling other key positions in the university's administration. "We wanted to make sure we were completely ready for this size of event," Miller said. Other committee members were Ruby Brace, Vice President of Finance and Business Affairs, her administrative assistant, Becky Ives, and committee chairwoman, Marilyn Davis, Milliken's chief of staff. Area schools that belong to the Illinois Junior Academy of Science include the Lutheran School Association and Holy Family Schools in Decatur, and Taylorville High School and Taylorville Junior High. Jim Rauf, another mathematics professor at Milliken, will deliver the keynote address on swarm intelligence, programming like ants, bees, and fireflies. Instead of writing one big computer program to solve a problem, you can write smaller ones and have them work collectively on a solution, Rauf said. The topic is a nice intersection among a lot of academic areas and should appeal to kids. From Rachel Rogers, a Herald and Review staff writer from Decatur, article entitled "Ameren Employees Give Ramp Assist to Veteran." With a dozen Ameren, Illinois employees stationed in her garage with construction materials and power tools, Maria Jacobs described their efforts as a godsend. The group of volunteers arrived at the Ashley Court home about 8 a.m. Saturday and built a wheelchair ramp for Maria's husband of nearly 31 years, Edwin Jacobs, an Air Force veteran who was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease about 15 years ago. "I think they are angels from heaven," she said. "I don't have the words to describe how great this is." The volunteers were members of the Ameren Employee Research Group, Powering Connections for All Abilities, and the Ameren Military Veteran Employees Group. The volunteer initiative has produced 6 ramps in the past 2 years, and the Jacobs Project served as one of 4 planned ramps this year, said Andrew Nygbrug, drafting leader for the company drafting department. The groups try to direct their efforts to those in need who might not qualify for funds to improve accessibility in their homes, preferably veterans who fall through the cracks, he said. Within 6 hours, the volunteers completed the ramp, which will allow Edwin Jacobs to be transported inside without having to wheel around to the front entrance. For winter and bad conditions, this will keep him out of the elements, Nybrug said. Patrick Owens, supervisor of the Ameren, Illinois meter shop in Decatur, has volunteered through the company for almost 20 years. The look on their face says it all, and it's equally gratifying, Owens said. We live and work in this community, and so we want to put our volunteer efforts into this community, too. Project contributors also include Macon Resources, Inc. and Architectural Expressions. During the Korean War, Jacobs served with the Air Force and was stationed in Japan. He also was a pastor at Prairie Avenue Christian Church for 6 years and has authored two books titled Magnificent Journey and Answers to Unanswered Questions of Life and Religion. And Allison Petty, a Herald and Review staff writer, brings us Lake Decatur, the Dredge Report. Great Lakes dredge and docks crews are about 1/10 of the way completed with the 6-year dredging of Lake Decatur. Since work began in late October, the city's contractor has removed 897,850 cubic yards of sediment from Basin 1 of the lake. It dredged out more than 500,000 cubic yards in 2015 and 242,000 cubic yards in the month of May alone, said Jerry Stevens, Engineering Services Coordinator for the city's Water Management Department. 1 cubic yard is equal to about 200 gallons of material. The total project calls for the removal of 10.8 million cubic yards of sediment from the lake, which will gain about 30% more capacity, officials have said. There are 32 employees working for Great Lakes and 18 working for its subcontractor, Terra Contracting, which is adding height to the sediment storage basin in Oakley. Of those 50 employees, 35 are from Macon and the surrounding counties, Stevens said. Over the weekend, workers moved the dredge, one of the 3 booster pump stations, and several thousand feet of floating pipeline from an area near the South Water Treatment Plant to a new location, just south of Lost Bridge Road. The dredge is likely to remain in the Big Creek area for the rest of the year and the beginning of next year. About 20% of the total sediment removed from the lake will come from this area. And in state news from Chicago, by Carla Johnson, an AP medical writer, abortion still declining in Illinois. The annual number of abortions in Illinois is continuing to fall, reflecting a national trend and reaching the lowest point in a decades-long decline. The latest figures show that there were 40,750 surgical abortions performed in Illinois in 2013, which is 2.6% fewer than the 41,859 in 2010, Illinois Department of Public Health data show. The numbers do not include abortions induced by prescription-only pills containing the drug mifepristone, which is also known as RU486. Illinois plans to include bill-induced abortions in its next report. The Guttmacher Institute, a research group that supports abortion rights, recently estimated that medical abortions in 2011 accounted for 23% of all abortions nationwide. Women traveling from other states for abortions in Illinois raised the totals by approximately 3,000 abortions each year. Illinois has less restrictive abortion rights than neighboring states and shares borders with Missouri and Indiana, 2 states among the most aggressive in passing abortion restrictions. Illinois does require girls younger than 18 to notify a parent or adult family member 48 hours before an abortion, unless a judge grants a waiver. Otherwise, Illinois abortion laws are considered unrestrictive compared to other states, and public funding is available for medically necessary abortions. Nationwide, abortions have decreased by about 12% since 2010, according to Associated Press. The biggest decreases were shared almost equally by Republican-led states that have joined in enacting a wave of anti-abortion laws in recent years, and states that have rejected such measures while protecting abortion rights. In Illinois, teen pregnancy rates are falling, which may account for some of the drop in abortions. Abortion rights advocates also credit education and increasing access to contraceptives. Abortion foes, meanwhile, cite changing attitudes toward terminating a pregnancy. "This is the most pro-life generation we've seen in history," said Emily Zender of Illinois Right to Life. Illinois has more than 50 pregnancy resource centers that offer counseling about alternatives to abortion, she said. Two Illinois abortion clinics closed in recent years following a sweep of state inspections. Abortion rights advocates believe women who would have visited those now closed clinics found abortions available elsewhere. Women in Rockford, for example, where a clinic closed in 2011, following a health and safety violation, can obtain abortions in Madison, Wisconsin. "Women are still obtaining abortions," said Carol Bright of Planned Parenthood of Illinois. "They have to travel greater distances and incur greater expense to do so." What's shifting the abortion numbers downward, Britt said, is women choosing the most effective forms of birth control, such as intrauterine devices and hormonal implants. Illinois Planned Parenthood reports a 111% increase between 2010 and 2013 in the use of IUDs and implants. The Affordable Care Act boosted the trend because it requires contraceptive coverage without out-of-pocket costs for women, said Lee Hasselbacher, policy coordinator for family planning and contraceptive research at the University of Chicago. Illinois also has urged doctors to make sure women covered by Medicaid receive information on all approved birth control methods, with emphasis on presenting the most effective methods first, specifically IUDs and implants. In Illinois, it's a combination of education and awareness of the diverse array of contraceptives available among providers, family planning services, and women, particularly young women, Hasselbacher said. Women succeed when they find a method they like. An article entitled "Soil plus Food plus Water equals Fun," written by Valerie Wells, a Herald and Review staff writer. From Forsyth. Nasika Ahmed mows grass and pulls weeds at home, but doesn't have a suitable space for a flower bed. The soon-to-be eighth grader has the knack for it and spent her Friday morning gardening gloves on and mulch at the ready to help younger children plant flowers in the youth garden at Forsyth Public Library. The youngest participant is still in diapers. "The Garden Club of Decatur oversees several youth gardens," said Gail Bruckner, youth co-chairwoman. She can't recall exactly when they began the project at Forsyth Library, but her guess was about 10 years ago. "The members help Decatur students with gardens at their buildings and other youth gardens at libraries. The Mount Zion Public Library's planting is set for June 15th. National Garden Week is this week, but scheduling doesn't always work out to have the plantings during the official week. We're counting it anyway," she said with a chuckle. "We teach them about soil, food, and water. When we're through, the members will fill out the bed and mulch the whole thing." The turnout at Forsyth was so big that Bruckner said she thought they'd have to make a second trip to Connie's greenhouse, which gave them a generous discount on plants. The Forsyth Sunrise Rotary provided the funds to buy plants. Because annuals provide the most consistent color display all summer, that's what the Garden Club uses for youth gardens. "The annual project is part of the library's summer programming," said Rachel Miller, library director. "This is a very cooperative project with the Garden Club ladies," Miller said. "They're amazing to work with. They come in and they're so hands-on with the kids, and they really show the kids this is how you can go home and plant flowers. We've actually had people come back and tell us they planted gardens at home because their kids were so excited about things they did at the library." Besides the older children, such as Nasika, who were helping, several parents also showed up. And the library's youth services director, Sandy Hayes, got her hands dirty too. "Kids whose parents don't normally let them play in dirt and mud began by being a little hesitant to wade in and dig. But once Mom said it was all right, most of them went at it enthusiastically. The children watch over their plants all summer and can even look out the picture window in the children's department and see the garden," Miller said. Nasika is certainly not afraid to dig in. She laughingly complained of the heat and humidity, but she was everywhere, offering a helping hand. We're planning on gardening more at the house, she said of her family. Somehow, we always get flowers, but we never plant them. They always show up in different places. An article written by Karsten Bergstaller, a Lee News Service writer, titled No Contest, Public Service a Calling for Some Eastern Staff Members. This article out of Charleston. Lincoln Avenue may be the physical boundary between Eastern Illinois University and much of Charleston, but some members of the university community are working to show that boundary is permeable. Eastern staff and administrators serve on various boards and committees around town, including the Library Board of Trustees and the Tree and Historic Preservation Commissions. Each one has a unique story of how they came to be on their respective committees. Provost and Vice President for Academic Affairs, Blair Lord, who serves on the Charleston Historic Preservation Commission, said his path to joining was set in motion when he was searching for a new house. What actually got me involved was when I purchased the famous former president Livingston Lord's house on 7th Street, he said. By buying a historically interesting house, people said, well, maybe he'd be interested in the Historical Preservation Commission. Although Blair Lord is a history buff, he said he wasn't well-versed in historic preservation, so it's been a learning experience. Since purchasing the home, he's been collecting period-appropriate furniture, he said. He's had to go before the commission himself twice for certificates of appropriateness to modify the home, once to add a garage, and again to add an overhang above the house's back kitchen stairs, he said. Lord said he's honored to serve on the commission and help preserve the district. Working with other commission members, including Eastern professor Nora Pat Small and Tarbell curator of education Kit Morris, has been a terrific way to expand his knowledge of Charleston, he said. Several Eastern employees helped the Charleston Carnegie Public Library through its Board of Trustees. Alan Lanham and Robert Wiseman, both of Booth Library, are on the board, as is Department of Journalism Interim Chair Sally Renault. Lanham, who serves as Dean of Library Affairs, said he was asked to join the library's Board of Trustees as library officials were looking at expanding, capitalizing on his experience from expanding Booth Library. Lanham said he looks at his position on the board as a good opportunity for community service. He's enjoyed working with other librarians and is happy that, through careful management, the library is paying off its loan on schedule. Lanham is looking forward to the updates and changes the library will be able to make once the debt is totally paid off. As a university employee, it's part of his job to be connected with the bigger community and to serve the public. As a state employee, it's important to ensure both the university and the public library are thriving, he said. It's in everybody's best interests to make the community the best it can be and watch out for its future, he said. And we will now take a short break and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for June 8th, 2015. Please stay tuned.